The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hi and welcome to this week's Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, which helps people with cancer to find out about and access integrative medicine. This week is another sneak preview of our upcoming annual international conference, which is taking place on the 1st of December in central London. It's called Starting the Conversation, Exploring the Potential of Integrative Medicine. The conversation we're referring to is the one between conventional medicine, the medicine of our NHS, and all the other approaches, sometimes called complementary, complementary alternative, or lifestyle medicine. Integration is the magic that can happen when the warring sides put down their arms and begin to talk about what's best for patients. We have a fantastic lineup of speakers for the day, so in today's show, I'm going to introduce you to a few of them. Starting the conference off and hosting our international speakers is Patricia Peat of Cancer Options. Patricia had long experience as an oncology nurse before she established a consultancy to help people develop their own integrated programs by supplying high-quality, personalised information on the best options from both conventional and lifestyle medicine. Patricia has also collaborated with Yes to Life as author of our book, The Cancer Revolution, Integrative Medicine, The Future of Cancer Care, which is a tour de force book describing the full range of integrative medicine and written by Patricia and 37 other international experts. It's described as your guide to integrating complementary and conventional medicine. I'm talking to Patricia at her practice in Nottinghamshire over Skype. Hi, Patricia. Thanks a lot for coming on the show today.
Hello, Robin. Yes, you're very welcome indeed.
Yeah, so you're our opening speaker at the upcoming conference, Starting the Conversation, and you'll be hosting our two international speakers in the morning sessions. That's Dr. Ashwin Mehta coming over from the US and Dr. Abdul Slocum, who's from Istanbul. Your talk is entitled The Journey Towards Integration, something I think you know quite a bit about. Can you tell us the kind of territory you're looking to cover in your talk and what your overall feeling is about progress in integrative medicine?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, I'm just doing a brief introduction. Probably speaking for 25 minutes is the greatest challenge I've ever had. And then having to stop after that, I will attempt it. I don't know if I'll succeed it, but there we go. I really want to, for people, really sort of bring everyone up to date on where this whole brilliant integrative movement is going. And what are we actually finding out, discovering about cancer, about metabolic approaches and their influence, and how much science is backing us up that we really should be in this country moving on from this standoff position between the two sides, and then, you know, moving on to our two, hopefully, and I'm sure, brilliant speakers will be able to show us that actually putting integrative metabolic approaches into place and giving people lots of choices is actually an infinitely good idea, and why aren't we doing it?
Right. Okay. So you're bullish about progress, the direction things are heading?
Yeah, I am, because A, we're seeing the results, and I think some of the things that people will hear on Saturday will hopefully surprise people,
right,
and equally enlighten them. And also, I think what I've seen particularly over the last couple of years is that the science is coming through very strongly to support the, you know, the idea of integrative medicine, the idea of supporting the metabolism and recovery against cancer. That's coming through very strongly. And also, you know, in this country as well, we these things are kind of sneaking in quietly.
Right.
Well, there is quite a bit going on that perhaps people aren't aware of, and I do want to touch on that in my talk as well. That it's no longer just us standing up and jumping up and down on our soapbox anymore. There are, you know, little shoots of things happening in the medical world that makes you think, yeah, actually, that's going to be the integrated world.
Mm. Great, great. So, as I mentioned, you're going to be hosting the two other distinguished speakers from the morning, which means that, of course, you're going to get an opportunity to question them yourself. So what sort of thing do you think you might be asking them?
Different things. They have slightly different approaches and come out from slightly different aspects. With Dr. Slocum and his work at Kemotherapia in Istanbul, I'm very interested personally, his journey from orthodox oncology to we get better results if we do this, if we add oxygen, if we support the metabolism, if we use a ketogenic diet. How did that come about?
Yes.
And also, I know that certainly in his own country, his work is not always regarded as highly as it should be either, in a similar way to here. So I think it would be very interesting to catch up on how, as some of these incredible results are being disseminated across the medical world, how that's being received, and how we can, you know, get things taken more note of, and how we can get the message out that these things are happening. As well as, you know, I very, very much want to look into his interpretation of, you know, the science behind these things and why they've chosen the specifics that they have in terms of treatment, why those are the particular things that they've picked out to integrate with chemotherapy.
Yes, certainly it's very interesting, as you say, the what has led them, sort of opened the door to this kind of thinking, because, of course, that's the magic ingredient. We need to open a door here within orthodox medicine to gain the attention and interest of oncologists across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And what made him sort of stop just using straight chemotherapy and say, you know, okay, let's look at resistant cancers. Let's look at how can we break down this resistance. What are we going to do? Let's just not just throw chemotherapy at cells that may well be resistant to it, but can we influence that and then to have the marvellous success that they do in actually doing that?
Brilliant.
You know, there's an awful lot we can learn, I think, from that.
Yeah, hopefully we will. All right, and how about Dr. Mehta?
Well, Dr. Mehta, as we're seeing in a lot of areas in oncology in America and integrated medicine, America's really embodied the spirit of integrated medicine in a large direction. So, you know, he's medical director of integrated medicine at Memorial Healthcare System. He's trained under Dr. Andrew Weil. He's taken on board all those different holistic psychological and physical elements that need to be attended to and be brought together to enable someone to achieve wellness. And also, obviously, you know, his research interests are in, you know, preventive as well. And I think he's interesting, a contrasting perspective than, you know, sort of Dr. Slocum is really working brilliantly in breaking down very hard resistant cancers and combining that methodology. Dr. Mehta's treatment is very, very much more complementary and, you know, in programs of enhancing quality of life, more focus, a little more on the person as a whole rather than the medical model. And I think there's two very, very interesting balances of perspective there. You know, and what sort of results do they get, how they're measuring their results. You know,
yes.
That's something we've all got to be very aware of,
yeah,
in terms of measuring our outcomes, etc.
Mm.
So I'm very, very much looking forward to speaking with him.
So nice that they're very different, really, but they're both pushing at different parts of the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think from, you know, anybody with cancer or a carer's perspective, the question when you look at, you know, the overwhelming information that could be out there in the complementary world is, how do I work out what my priority is? Where do I put my focus?
Yes.
You know, and I think listening to these two amazing gentlemen and what they achieve with people will give us an insight. You know, it's often the case of what's the most appropriate thing to do at that time.
Yes.
I think we can gain tremendously from their knowledge.
Mm, great. Okay, so lastly, I wanted to ask you about the event as a whole. The afternoon is going to be spent looking at some of the best initiatives that are currently occurring in the UK. Rather, as you mentioned, there are these shoots appearing everywhere. And these are driving towards lifestyle, medicine, prevention, non-drug approaches, all that kind of thing. So how important do you think events such as this conference are in driving this agenda forward?
Oh, I think they're absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. I think one of the things about, you know, driving integrated medicine forward and getting that information out there is, if our medical communities are isolated from this information, how can we expect them to learn this change if they're not being exposed to it?
Right.
So I know some of the very good stuff you've put on over recent years, there's been an increasing amount of medical presence in the audience, which is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And having people being able to access that. And, you know, we need to be able to open up lines of communication. You know, you call it starting the conversation. We absolutely should be. Now, having conversations about these things that are the, you know, what really is good, safe, sensible approaches that are going to be beneficial to people that might be integrated here, or if not integrated within the current medical practice, at least to being able to work alongside in a supportive manner.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that's great. As you say, it's very heartening that we get increasing numbers of doctors turning up. And, of course, increasing numbers of our speakers are also conventional healthcare practitioners, which is very exciting because that's what we really want, of course.
I would also say, as anyone who's coming to the conference, I think it's going to be a great mix because, I think you've done a great job of getting a great mix of information that's helpful to people, because you don't have a whole day of people sort of learning what's going on for everyone else, thinking, well, that's great, I wish we could have that here. We go from the, what we could potentially be doing, but then looking at, what is useful information for them to be able to use and take away, and not sat listening for all day, which I highly recommend, so that's great.
Yeah, well, that is important. Yeah, it's very easy to get excited about stuff you can't have. Very important. I think there are some great things happening and we want to demonstrate that, and we want to have the people there who have got the information about it as well. So, great. Looking forward very much to seeing you at the event, Patricia, and to you launching the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, Robin. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Next, I'm moving on to one of the exciting lineup of speakers for the afternoon sessions, which are dedicated to UK initiatives to change our model of healthcare. John Liebling is an activist working with two organisations, the United Patients Alliance and the Centre for Medical Cannabis. Cannabis has been a big story in cancer, as well as many other health conditions, and the recent change in the law marks an important turning point in its trajectory, and one that John is closely involved in. I'm speaking to John over Skype. Hi John, thanks very much for coming on the Yes Life show.
Hello there, thanks for inviting me.
And well, I'm delighted that you're going to be speaking at our forthcoming conference on December the 1st. You've got a couple of titles to your name: Political Director of the United Patients Alliance and Researcher for the Centre for Medical Cannabis. Do you want to just very briefly just tell us what that means?
Yes, certainly. Well, I mean, I joined UPA when we found, more or less when we founded in 2014, with the help of Professor David Nutt and the only Green MP, Caroline Lucas.
Right.
I immediately started as political director, and that's kind of what I've been doing for really the last sort of 4 years or so. But very much more recently, kind of sort of timely, in response to these changes, there's also the setup of a new organisation, the Centre for Medicinal Cannabis, which is looking at building a blueprint for medicinal cannabis over the next couple of years and going to demonstrate how we might deliver that for patients. And I've been taken on board for that organisation as a researcher in the first instance.
Very good. So yours is what you call a very hot topic indeed at the moment. Well, firstly, because of the unprecedented level of interest in cannabis as a medicine from both scientists and from the public. And secondly, because of the recent landmark change in the law. So how important would you say cannabis is to public health?
I'd have to say it is probably one of the single most important, call it new classification, of potential medicines and therapeutic benefits that I think we've seen in a very, very long time. I mean, obviously, we know from our own estimates that there are around 1.1 million people in the UK who are currently consuming cannabis as primarily as a medicine.
1.1 million,
and many of those are treating chronic and severe conditions. And in fact, we estimate around about 30,000 of that 1.1 million, really are in need of some serious health intervention that cannabis can help them with. Mm. And so, yes, it's one of the most important aspects of future medicine, I believe.
Wow. All right. So on this show, I recently interviewed David Harvey Austin, and he's been campaigning for decades to get mercury amalgam out of the public's mouths. And I talked to him at the point where the new EU ruling had just banned it for a certain categories of people. So I imagine the recent change in the law around cannabis was a similarly euphoric moment for you as a long-time campaigner. I'm sure you want to see a lot more change, but do you see this as a watershed moment?
I mean, it absolutely is. And I mean, I know and fully appreciate and understand that the changes haven't actually yet had a direct impact on patients, because there are still, many, many blocks and challenges to get through. But in terms of a policy change, I can kind of describe that the UPA team on that day were without exception, actually in tears. The feeling was incredibly profound. I mean, we've been fighting so hard for this. We're all chronic, patients with chronic illnesses who give our time for free. And we've been fighting so hard over so many years. We were literally left speechless on the day when it happened. And we really didn't know what to say. And so, yes, it's absolutely huge that finally we have recognised that cannabis has got therapeutic benefits. And now, finally, some doctors in the UK are legally allowed to prescribe without facing the threat of 14 years in jail. So this is huge step, but now we're in a position where really it's up to our medical profession now to make the best of this quite broad and open policy framework that they've been given by the government.
Fantastic. Well, it certainly seems like quite a moment, even to a lay person who's not depending on it. It's a massive change in something which has been just completely static for years, for decades, isn't it? And huge potential being overlooked for completely other reasons.
We know from experience, we know the standard government statement whenever you ask them about cannabis at any time in the last 40 years or so has been pretty much word for word, exactly the same. And to be fair, that's the way governments and policy works. They always state it until the moment that it changes. But obviously, for all the people who've been suffering for many, many years, it's great news that we've got to this stage. It's perhaps a shame that it seems in this country to make change happen, you kind of need the illness or the threat of a dying child in order for people to actually, to politicians, to make this change. And literally that's what it took. And, you know, I take the opportunity now to thank Hannah, whose son Alfie suffers from a severe form of epilepsy, and Charlotte Caldwell, whose son Billy has been in the same, it's a very, very similar situation. And it's their courage and determination and fight that has forced this issue to finally be opened. So we're very grateful for that, but there's a lot of work to do yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, your talk at the conference is entitled Politics, the Law and Medicine. So would you give us a very brief summary of the kind of information you want to share with us?
Well, certainly. I mean, coincidentally and conveniently, perhaps, in terms of time, we've just completed our 2018 version of our patient survey, which is a survey of patients from all over the country, about 1,750 of them, which shows the reasons they take cannabis, how they take it, what prescription medications they've stopped, whether they've told their doctor, and lots of other incredible information that's there. And I'll be presenting that and obviously putting it into the context of what's been going on perhaps over the last 10 years or so in cannabis reform. And hopefully what we can begin to look forward to over the next sort of 12 to 24 months as this new policy beds in and matures.
Mm. Well, that's the most exciting bit, of course, is looking forward. Yeah, we're really hoping for some change here. So that's brilliant. Okay, well, look, many thanks. I'm really looking forward to meeting you on the 1st, and I think it's going to be an amazing day.
Oh, I hope so. I'm really looking forward to it myself for all sorts of reasons. I you know, even if I wasn't a speaker, I may have well been coming along to this one because, you know, I'm really excited, and thank you ever so much for inviting me.
Thanks, John. Next, I'm going to be talking to a team of speakers who are also going to be part of the afternoon sessions. Ali Jaffe and Ian Broadley, who are two fourth-year student doctors, are going to be speaking about a revolutionary initiative that they started in Bristol and that's now spread right across the UK. Ali and Ian were dismayed at the absence of nutrition and lifestyle medicine in their training, and so they decided to take matters into their own hands and set up NutriTank, an organisation that provides a forum for others like them to learn and share. NutriTank has set out to restore the eroded relationship between food, lifestyle and health in our modern world. Ali and Ian are truly inspirational. I caught them at separate locations over Skype amidst busy schedules, so apologies for a bit of background canteen bustle.
Good morning, Ali and Ian. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us on the Yes Live show today.
Good morning. We're so happy to be talking to you and be participating in such a wonderful organisation.
Hi, great to be involved, and thank you so much for asking me to be on the show. It's great to be a part of this.
Brilliant. So the reason we particularly wanted you to speak at our upcoming conference is because you're both student doctors, but you're also instrumental in establishing a new initiative called NutriTank. Would you tell us what NutriTank is and why you founded it?
Absolutely. So NutriTank is something we are both absolutely passionate about. It's an information innovation hub for food, nutrition, lifestyle and sustainability. And we're aiming to empower communities to improve their health and well-being through lifestyle behavioural changes. So I think Ian can tell you a bit more about why we founded it in the first place, but it really, really seemed like there was a great need for it, considering that there is no nutrition and lifestyle medicine emphasis really in undergraduate medical curricula.
Mm. Exactly, yeah. Ali and I both go to Bristol Medical School, and when we were studying, we both saw that there was very little in the way of nutrition and lifestyle medicine education. So we felt we weren't, you know, as confident as we should be when we, advising patients on what they could eat, or, advising them on the specifics of nutrition and lifestyle. And we thought, why is this happening? So we actually said, okay, we need to do something about this. let's talk to our faculty and ask for more, you know, let's ask for more nutrition education. And so we did that. And then actually what we did was we started to build these hubs across the country whereby students would come and start to educate themselves, invite speakers to come and talk to them about nutrition and lifestyle within the medical sphere. And this has now led to medical students across the country educating themselves through these hubs. And it's brought a massive community together.
Well, that's brilliant. I bet this is music to the ears of many of our listeners to this show. They're kind of desperate for a new direction in healthcare. It's a great initiative. It's great to hear about you two, actually, because it was Sheila Dillon from the BBC Radio 4 food programme I was interviewing who put me onto you. I'd actually never heard of NutriTank, but very exciting.
Oh, that's great.
So I think what I'm really interested to know is how it's being received amongst your colleagues. I'd love to imagine there's a whole new generation of upcoming doctors out there absolutely hungry for a new model of healthcare and prevention. Am I dreaming or is it really true?
No,
it's
really true.
It's really true.
Oh, great.
People are so enthusiastic and engaged with this. So currently we've got 24 hubs in 24 medical schools across the country, and they're 34 medical schools. So we're hoping by 2019, sometime in spring, that we'll have all medical schools on board. And the students who are part of the NutriTank societies across the country are so passionate about this. And what we really wanted to do with NutriTank is we wanted to be quite a modern organisation and have kind of a decentralised approach and create leaders. We didn't want to, whilst In and I are the founders, we wanted to create a whole community of leaders who would be able to champion this initiative within their own community. So each NutriTank hub has two leaders or so running it and a committee helping them who invite speakers from doctors to dietitians to food writers to come and speak about lifestyle medicine and nutrition, food as medicine really, within their medical schools. So that whilst there are the skeptics still there and people who haven't really realised the sheer importance of this, which is slightly ridiculous considering the surge of chronic disease, much of which is lifestyle related, we really are seeing positive movements.
Great. All right, well, look, I think it's fair to describe medicine generally as deeply conservative, but the most deeply conservative corner of it all, it seems to me, is oncology, where they're still busy defending sugar as something useful for keeping weight on. Do you have anything hopeful to report in this arena? Are any of the people who are interested in your initiative in the oncology sphere?
Obviously, we're medical students, but we have been taught to sort of read the literature and see what's actually going out on there within the science. And what sort of makes us passionate about this movement is the fact that patients have, you know, once they do get some advice from healthcare professionals, they are seeing some really, really great outcomes. You know, advising patients about nutrition and lifestyle has been effective. You know, findings from a meta-analysis involving over 200,000 cancer patients, you know, show that adherence to a high quality diet reduced the overall risk of mortality to 22% in cancer survivors, whilst adherence to a westernized diet was associated with the 46% overall mortality risk. So these are the kind of facts that we want our future doctors to know about, you know,
right.
Just advising patients is enough to say that we can really, you know, help outcomes. Mm. And that's not being done at the moment and that needs to be done.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Mm. Well, I love to hear that. Okay, so your talk at our conference on the 1st is entitled From Symptom Management to Disease Prevention. You're going to do this talk as a kind of double act, am I right?
Of course.
Yes. Yeah.
The partisan kind.
Yeah, and would you like to tell us the kind of information that you want to share with our delegates?
So we'd like to obviously give more of an insight into NutriTank's philosophy and a bit more about the organisation, how we run. And then we would really like to, in somewhat of an interactive way, get your delegates to be thinking about the alternative therapies along the lines of lifestyle medicine therapies and food as medicine and how beneficial they can be for both prevention and management. So we'll give a few examples from different body symptoms, from an array of different chronic illnesses. And hopefully, I'm sure everyone's already convinced, but this will just convince them even more that this is the right direction that Western medicine needs to head into, because for so many years, this has really been overlooked. And especially within the hospital setting, food has been viewed as that kind of extra part of care, that hospitality side, rather than as an actual therapy of food as medicine.
Okay. Ian, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, so we will sort of come from a very sort of medical student view. We'll say, you know, we're going to talk about things which are on our level. We're not going to go out of our depth, but we're definitely going to show the evidence for this. We're going to talk about why we're so passionate about this, and this is all down to the science. We're not, you know, we're looking at all these papers and we're saying, look, this really needs to become mainstream, and medical students need to know about it.
Okay, sounds absolutely brilliant. I can't wait to meet you and to hear more of what you've got to say about it on December 1st. So thank you again very much for giving us this little snippet of what's coming.
Absolutely, thank you very much for having us.
Thank you, Robin.
To round up today's show, I'm going to talk to Yes to Life HQ, where Sue De Cesare, our executive director, and Adana Harris, who manages our events, have been hard at it pulling together the many strands that will make up the conference.
Hi, Sue and Adana. Tell us how the conference is shaping up.
Right, so the ins and outs and the details of the event day. It's taking place on Saturdays in Conway Hall Ethical Society in London, in central London. Mm-hmm. And the nearest tube stops will be Holborn, Chancery Lane and Russell Square. We're also getting lovely, healthy and delicious lunches provided from Mayfair Catering. So it's going to be lots of beautiful salads, some warming soups, and there'll be vegetarian, vegan and gluten-free options. Also, for people who are attending who are beneficiaries of Yes to Life, as in people that we are supporting, there's a special discount on offer. There's also a discount on offer for any students, and there will be 7 certified hours from a CPD standards office available for anyone attending. And in a normal Yes to Life tradition, we'll be giving away goodie bags, which will contain goodies from WeLeader, Really Healthy Company, BioCare, and some others.
Excellent.
So this year, we decided to create a new initiative, and we've called it Information Stations. A whole day sitting down at a conference can be quite exhausting, so we wanted to get people up and walking about. So we've created this unique opportunity actually for a face-to-face chat with our speakers, who will all have their own stand there. So the delegates can get up, they can wander around. We have a slot in the afternoon for that. We do have Q&As, but often people don't feel comfortable asking a question in front of a whole big audience. Right. So it will give those people an opportunity to go along to a stand and have a chat with the speakers. They're going to be around for the whole day as well. So if you don't get chance to chat to them during that particular time, which is allotted to do just that, they'll be there during the refreshment breaks as well.
Fantastic.
As well as our speakers, we also have a few additional people on the information stations. One of them is Dr. Arian Tavakoli from the Quantum Clinic, and Robin has interviewed her before on UK Health Radio. So she will be sharing information about oncothermia. We also have Alex Laird, who is a herbalist who has worked with people with cancer. So if you're interested in learning more about herbs and how you can use them, you can go along and have a chat with her.
Right.
We'll also have Melissa Smith from the Alliance for Natural Health. So she'll be on the stand talking about their new blueprint for sustainable healthcare, which they're about to launch this year. So this is brand new information that she'll be sharing with people on the day. Mm-hmm. And also we'll have Mark Bosher. So Mark spoke at our conference last year, and he is from MS Hearts, and he will be talking about hyperbaric oxygen, the benefits of it and what it can offer for people with cancer. So those are the information stations. People will have just under an hour to get up and wander around and have a chat with the people on those stations. So we're excited to be able to offer that this year.
Great. Thanks very much for that.
We look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you both.
All right.
I hope that's given you a little taste of what's shaping up to be a brilliant day. I want to underline what Sue was saying about the information stations. This is an unparalleled opportunity to access a huge range of expertise all at one time and in one place. And all of that is included in the cost of the day. For people with cancer or health practitioners, this is a massive bonus. To find out more about the conference and to book your place, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and choose events from the left-hand sidebar. I look forward to seeing many of you there, and if you get the chance, do please introduce yourself to me. I'll be back again next week with another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.